From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If you don't know the tax plans of the 2016 candidates for the presidency, there is a lot you're missing. The differences in the visions, their plans, are enormous. The bottom line number on your tax return could change a lot, up or down. So could the way we spend and live and swim in red ink. This hour on Point, Clinton, Trump, Sanders, Cruz, Kasich, and their wildly different tax plans. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you working on your taxes? Are you wondering what the next president might mean for your bottom line, for the country's? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Are they talking about taxes out there? Yes, they are. Here's Ted Cruz in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, March 14th.
We will pass a simple flat tax. Where every American can fill out our taxes on a postcard. And when we do that, we should abolish the IRS.
Flat tax, postcard. I love the way he says that stuff. Joining me now from Washington is Leonard Berman. He is director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute, professor of public administration, international affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, co-author of Taxes in America, What Everyone Needs to Know. Len Berman, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, great to have you here. And with us from New York is Jean Sahadi, senior writer at CNN Money, where she's written great, clear analyses of the tax plans put forward by each of the presidential candidates. You can see those at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also find a calculator there, calculator, to estimate how your tax hit would change under each candidate's plan. Jean Sahadi, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's just jump in here first. I mean, Len, can you speak to the range of what structures or tax plans? I mean, if you go from is it Trump at one end to Bernie at the other end? I don't know how you define the range, but it's such a huge sweep and swath of difference here.
Yeah, the range is huge. on the Trump end, he would cut taxes by about $10 trillion over a decade. It might actually be more because he creates a giant new loophole that we can't even figure out how much people would exploit it. On the Sanders end, he actually would raise taxes by $15 trillion. And he says that people would be happy to pay that because of the new public services he'd be providing, like free health care and universal access to higher education. Ted Cruz's plan is a little bit short of Trump's, but not much. It would cost almost $9 trillion over a decade. And Clinton's plan actually looks a lot like the third term of the Obama administration. It's not, it would actually make the tax code a little bit more complicated, and it would raise a little bit of taxes, which I think she intends to use for other tax cuts that she hasn't announced yet and some new spending priorities. It's not a huge change from current law. There are a whole lot of interesting things to talk about in these plans. The thing that's disconcerting for me is that some of the truly innovative plans that have been proposed on the Republican side seem not to recognize a connection between the amount of taxes we need to raise and how much it costs to run the government. And on the Democratic side, I mean, Senator Sanders' proposal would raise tax rates to levels that we haven't seen in many, many decades. And there's a lot of concern that it would cause a big reduction in working and saving and could hurt the economy that way.
You're quoted all over the place calling Bernie Sanders' plans, they would constitute the largest peacetime tax increase in history. People may be for them, but if you're for them, you better believe that you're going to get a lot in return because the tax rate, the bottom line on your form and beyond, would be a big change, probably in the up direction. I mean, I'm looking here off this calculator, and again, you can find this at our website. Len's outfit put this together with Vox. And Gene, I mean, Trump has got cuts all over, though they're much bigger for the wealthy. Looking here under Trump, for example, if you made $30,000 to $35,000, you'd pay $440 less in taxes. And this is a little bit of a complicated calculation. Cruz, $530 less in taxes. Clinton, almost status quo, $10 less. Sanders,
For people making just $30,000 to $35,000, $3,000+ more a year net in taxes. On the other hand, if you're making $1 million with Trump, you're paying over $130,000 less in taxes. In Sanders, you're paying over $167,000 more in taxes. This is a very big swing, Jean.
It is a big swing. And in terms of the Sanders plan, though, the campaign makes a big point of saying, yep, look, even though if you just isolate the tax plan, you're going to see a tax increase for everybody. And that's primarily, I think, because of the 2.2% premium tax that he adds to everyone's
federal
top
taxes.
Rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But in return, they say the net effect on your after-tax income will actually be positive once you account for the fact that you'll be getting free health care, because that premium tax that you'll be yep. paying will replace what you're paying now in terms of premiums. People question those numbers, but that is the promise. And I think one of the interesting things about the premium tax, though, that nobody talks about when we're talking about how much these plans cost and how the effect will be on individuals, is that the premium tax is almost a public concession to the fact that when you want to do something big like Medicare for All, you want to create a new entitlement, everybody has to chip in. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Democrats always say tax the rich, tax the rich, and they do propose that in spades. But I think it's impressive that Sanders has basically tacitly acknowledged we can't do this just on the backs of the rich.
It's clear. He's saying, look, if we want all this, and he's talking, of course, about free college, and he's talking about Medicare for All, universal health care, and there are taxes there that would pay for it. Let's walk through these. Hillary, just one by one, Hillary Clinton's, take us there, Gene. You and Len both say this is closest to the status quo, though she has significant changes here. She brings the Buffett rule in, the so-called Buffett rule, that people with adjusted incomes over $1 million would pay a minimum of 30% of their income in taxes. Right. But give us a sense of what she would bring to the way taxes work in this country if her plan were to be embraced.
Well, I want to credit the Tax Policy Center with a lot of what I'm about to say, because they do tremendous analysis on these plans. And really, when Len said that she would be like an Obama third term in terms of taxes, the Buffett rule originated during Obama's term, the concept for it and some bills for it. And it all started with Warren Buffett, who said he paid a lower rate than his secretary, which is not quite true. But so her effect on the wealthiest is really where you'd see the changes. It would make it more complicated for them to figure out their taxes, because by adding the Buffett rule and keeping the alternative minimum tax, and in addition, calling for a 4% surcharge on adjusted gross income over $5 million, she's basically saying, look, if you make a ton of money, you're going to have to calculate your taxes at least three different ways and figure out under which way you owe the most and pay that.
So good for the tax prep business, but also a lot of revenue for the federal government.
Potentially, yes. But, you know, according, again, to the Tax Policy Center, her plan would only raise about $1.1 trillion over a decade, which is like $100 billion a year.
So are you saying that would be a reduction in the federal deficit of $1 trillion plus, Gene? Did I lose Gene? Lynn, what do you say?
It's not likely to be. The campaign has made clear that they intend to make additional tax cut proposals. There's a low and middle income tax cut that they haven't announced yet, and they have new spending that they would like to do as well. I mean, I definitely would join Gene in, I guess, raising issues with the complexity in the Clinton plan. Mm-hmm. They decided, and this is really a continuation of Obama's policy, that they're going to really concentrate any tax increases on very high-income people. And there are a couple of problems with that. One is you end up with this kind of Rube Goldberg set of tax changes, the Buffett rule and the surtax, and there's a phase out of itemized deductions. It's also really, really complicated. But the other thing is it would make it really hard, if you have to follow that principle, it would make it really hard to actually reform the tax system, because if you're going to get rid of all the deductions and credits and other things that make our lives complicated and replace it with a simpler tax system, some people would end up paying higher taxes and some people would pay lower taxes. The ones who get the most advantage from tax breaks under current law would pay more. But basically, Clinton and Obama both have decided that people with incomes under $250,000 shouldn't ever have any increase in their taxes, even if they're taking advantage of lots and lots of tax preferences.
Clinton would make investment fund managers pay the so-called carried interest would be taxed as ordinary income. That would be new. Big estates, inheritance taxes would be higher. What exemption would go from, what is it, $5 million plus now down to $3.5 million or so. And I think by your calculation, the top 1% of households would see their tax burden go up by an average of $78,000, reducing after-tax income by 5%. That in pretty sharp contrast, Gene, to the Trump plan, let's say, or the Cruz plan. I don't know if Gene's there yet. Len.
Yeah, it's actually a huge contrast. I don't have all of these numbers in my head, but
that top 1% defined here as people making more than $730,000.
Right.
And I'm reading here, at least the way Gene has read your numbers, the top 1% would pay more than 3/4 of the tax increases under Clinton's plan.
Yeah, that sounds right. And under the Cruz plan, they would get a huge tax cut. For the top 0.1%, that is taxpayers with incomes over $3.7 million, they'd get an average tax cut of more than $2 million. And Trump is a little bit more modest, but he has very, very large tax cuts at that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the tax plans of the 2016 candidates, what they would mean for you and for the country. Gene Sahadi is with us, senior writer at CNN Money, joins us from New York. Leonard Berman is with us from the Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute, author of Taxes in America. They've done a lot of work on what these candidates have put out there for us to see. You can join us this hour. Are you working on your taxes these days? A little? A lot? Are you wondering what it would mean for you, for your tax bill, if it were President Sanders or Trump or Clinton or Kasich or Cruz? Are you with Cruz on the flat tax, Bernie on the big taxes, Hillary with steady as it goes? Are you more concerned with the taxes you pay or the country you want to see, or both? Changes under Clinton, but kind of as steady as she goes. Lynn Berman says Obama third term, sort of, when it comes to taxes. Here she is on CNBC talking with John Harwood about her plan. She'd raise taxes on people making more than $5 million per year.
I want to try to stop the gaming of the system. We're going after where we think the real money is, as we say, follow the money. And the tax system has been, in my view, not effective in capturing money from people who are very successful, and we need to do a better job.
Steady as she goes, kind of, with Clinton. Bernie Sanders would raise taxes a lot, and across the board, especially at the high end. In return, says the Sanders camp, you would get a lot. Just look at the health care benefit, and he says, oh, you know, you're going to come out ahead. Cruz, big tax cuts for the rich. Donald Trump, pretty strong tax cuts for the rich. Here he was at the Mar-a-Lago Club, his super fancy place in Palm Beach, March 1st, explaining his tax plan would help the middle class and business.
We're going to lower taxes substantially for the middle class. The middle class has been forgotten in our country. We're lowering taxes on business. You look at all the companies that are moving out. You see so many other companies constantly. Now they're leaving. They used to move from New York to Florida, but now they're moving from here.
And the rich? Yes, the rich are important. We're going to take care of the rich, said Mr. Trump.
We're going to make our country rich again. We're going to make our country great again. And we need the rich in order to make the great, I'm sorry to tell you.
Gene Sahadi in New York, take us into the Donald Trump plan. It's just 4 pages, single-spaced. He said it wouldn't increase deficits. Len Berman's group says it would increase them by many trillion, the federal deficit. But take us through the key provisions, if you would.
Sure. He basically reduces the number of income tax rates and lowers them considerably. So the top rate today is 39.6%. Under Trump, it would be 25%. He'd increase the standard deduction by a lot. He'd limit the value of itemized deductions, which primarily benefits high-income people.
Mm-hmm.
He would basically preserve investment tax rates, and then he would eliminate some big taxes like the estate tax, the alternative minimum tax, and the Medicare surtax, which high-income people pay both on their wages above a certain level and also on their investments above a certain level.
Eliminate the estate tax. That is no inheritance tax under a Donald Trump plan.
That's right. The rich really do make out, even though he has said that people like him would actually pay more under his plan. One really good example of how that's not true is with carried interest. Like Clinton, Trump has said, I'm going to tax carried interest like ordinary income.
This is what investment fund managers often exercise and makes their tax rate quite low compared to ordinary income.
That's right. So, you know, under Clinton, she would do that and they'd pay something like a 43% rate once you count the Medicare surtax.
Mm-hmm.
But under Trump, they would pay about the same, if not less, than they're paying now on their carried interest, because today they pay the capital gains rate on it plus the Medicare surtax. Under Trump, they would just pay the income tax, but he's lowered them so much that, in fact, it's no big difference for them. And, in fact, they might end up saving a lot of money.
And whatever the wealthy accumulate. Sorry, Len. Yes, please.
Yeah. I mean, actually, the thing he doesn't talk about is that he has a lower tax rate on business income.
Right.
Which would apply to partnerships and the kinds of organizations that have those carried interest deals. And they would actually pay a 15% tax rate compared to a 23.8% rate under current law. So they would actually make out like bandits.
Zero inheritance tax or estate tax. So people like Trump would just pass their billions on to their children and off they go. That's very different from what we see in some of these other plans. I mean, Ted Cruz is right there as well. We should point out that under Trump's plan, almost everybody would see tax cuts. I mean, there's a price to pay for that, and we'll look at it. But give us a sense, Gene, if you would, of the range of tax cuts here. You say middle-income households would see them cut by an average of $2,700 or for almost 5% of after-tax income.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people at the top 0.1% would see their taxes reduced by about $1.3 million on average, again, according to Tax Policy Center estimates.
Or something like 19% of their after-tax.
Yeah.
So really much bigger
cuts
for the rich.
Yes, that's right.
That leaves the country over the next decade, the Tax Policy Center estimates, with a $9.5 trillion increase in deficits, another $15 trillion in the second decade. Is it not just tax cuts that are unpaid for? I mean, what's the rationale for that? That just seems like, here, we'll give you a tax cut, and we sink deeper, trillions deeper into debt, unlike the Clinton plan.
Well, that's not what the Trump campaign says. The Trump campaign swears his plan is deficit neutral, meaning it will not add to deficits. And in fact, if it spurs the economic growth, they think it will reduce deficits from there. But really, nobody who's paid attention to deficits or tax policy believes that. They've crunched numbers. They know how much things cost. And it's just not a plausible statement to say it will not increase deficits. You know, he's relying on economic growth. He promises time and time again when it comes to the debt, I will cut spending. And by that, he means waste, fraud, and abuse, which is a very minor element. And he swears he will not touch entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, which is definitely popular with voters. But the truth is, long-term debt, to which his plan would add greatly, is driven in large part by entitlement spending over the next few decades. So to say just flat out you're not touching it means you flat out won't be dealing with a long-term debt problem.
And then we come to Ted Cruz. Now, again, Len, your calculations see a very large deficit, I think even larger under the Ted Cruz plan. Why?
It's not quite as large as Trump, but it's still really big. It'll be about $8.7 trillion over 10 years.
But I thought if you went out 20 years, I thought it got up into the $20 trillion range, or maybe I'm getting my numbers jumbled here.
$12 trillion in the second decade,
12
so 12
trillion.
Plus 8
gets even
nine,
bigger.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Mm-hmm.
What's driving that primarily under the Cruz plan, Len?
He gets rid of the estate tax. He gets rid of payroll taxes. What pays for Social Security and Medicare? He would replace all of that with a 15% value-added tax. He calls it a business flat tax, but it is a VAT. And a 10% income tax on individuals with very large exemptions for savings. So it's basically that the tax rates are not high enough to they're even with a fairly broad base, they're not high enough to bring in anywhere near as much revenue as under current law. The thing you can say in favor of Senator Cruz's plan is it would make things a lot simpler. as he says. And it, you know, were it not for the effects on the deficit, it would provide very good incentives for saving and for investment and working, because it would really lower marginal tax rates. The big problem is that the deficits would likely harm the economy over the long run and more than negate the benefits from lower marginal tax rates.
Gene, take us through the Ted Cruz plan from the top, because it's very head-turning. I mean, he says, you know, you could file your taxes on a postcard, flat tax, 10% flat income tax rate, and he would abolish the IRS. Take us through his plan.
Yeah, let's start with the abolishing the IRS. Even the IRS commissioner last week said, go ahead, do that, but you're just renaming the agency because you need somebody collecting the money if, in fact, you want to do anything with government programs. And any president who takes over next will have to do that. So call it something else, but you're going to have a tax collection agency even under Cruz. He does simplify it. I don't know if it would be quite as simple as a postcard, but it would definitely be simpler. He eliminates all the income tax rates that currently exist and replaces it with a flat 10% income tax.
For everybody.
Right. And he, I think, bumps up, Len, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but he bumps up the standard deduction by quite a lot for everyone. Mm-hmm. He preserved personal exemptions. He, as Len said, would eliminate – oh, he'd also eliminate the payroll tax, which is the money we pay into Social Security and Medicare for, the AMT, the estate tax, the Medicare surtax, and the corporate tax.
That's a lot of eliminated taxes.
And
he's cutting the tax rate to 10%. So what fills does it just mean we cut government down to that proverbial, you know, baby that you throw out with the bathwater?
Well, we don't know. I mean, you know, it's the thing about the Republican plans and Cruz and Trump in particular is they don't say how they'll pay for it except to promise economic growth, you know, and just great investments from business. And it just doesn't add up. And the thing about looking at what will this mean for your tax bill, just looking at their tax plans, it doesn't really speak to what will the net effect be on your family finances. Because if Ted Cruz decides he wants to cut spending radically and Congress agrees with him, they may end up cutting lots of programs that your family relies on. So you may not get hit on the tax side, but you may get hit on the spending, you know, on the government benefit side. It's just hard to say. So when I would take these numbers with not a grain of salt, because it's important to know the direction, but to understand that it is not the last thing you're going to be hearing about in terms of the effect on your family finances.
I don't doubt that at all, but it tells us a lot about people's priorities and how they see the way forward. I mean, the analysis, again, from the Tax Policy Center, Len Berman, your group here, as Gene reports it, saying that under the Cruz cuts, it would cut taxes for everyone in 2017, if it were there, by $6,100 on average. But the bulk of those tax cuts would go to the richest of the rich. Estimates that the top 0.1% of filers, that is people with incomes over $3.7 million, would see a boost in after-tax income of, as you said, $2 million on average, or nearly 29%. What's the rationale for that, Len? Is the idea that, I mean, we thought so much money had already flowed to the top, flow more to the top, and it will produce a growth boom?
That's exactly it. I think that Senator Cruz believes that by both exempting most savings from tax and by cutting marginal tax rates, it would produce a huge amount of economic growth. And, you know, if the plan were close to deficit neutral, if it were not for the effects on the deficit, most economists would see it as a very pro-growth plan. And you know, Senator Cruz has also promised to balance the budget, which is actually more than offsetting the $9 trillion of deficits in this plan, but also the deficits that are already baked into the cake under current law. So that would require just enormous cuts in government spending. And some of those cuts could actually have an effect on economic growth, too. For example, if the government stops investing in roads and bridges and infrastructure and in education and things like that, that could hurt the economy. There are other kinds of cuts that might not have much of an effect on economic growth over time, but it would have a big effect on individuals. For example, if you had to make big cuts in Social Security and Medicare and other programs that people rely on.
Gina, with no inheritance tax again here and these big, big breaks, I mean, we've heard about how much capital has just been parked on the sidelines for years now in this country. Exactly how does putting more cash into those very stuffed coffers pump up the economy?
Well, I think it's a philosophical argument. A lot of corporate cash has been parked offshore. In terms of individual cash, you know, people may be investing in tax-free bonds and things like that, which don't even get taxed. So there's a lot of money there, which the government, I guess, is not benefiting for, except that the municipalities and the federal government get the loans from the rich investors. So that is helpful in some way. But we pay out interest to those people, and it's tax-free in some respects. It's a Republican philosophy that cutting taxes will lead to economic growth, and it will open the spigots. People will be more willing to invest.
Proved out over time? I mean, I thought there was so much cash on the sidelines now, and of course we've had this philosophy and ups and downs in the economy with it over decades now.
Well, what I always come back to is that tax reform, like the kind that's been proposed, it's not the only thing that moves the economy. One of the concerns with the depth of the tax cuts that these plans would come up with is that we as a country have to do other things. And if we hit an economic downturn, which we tend to do cyclically, mm-hmm. we then have to bump up spending for safety net stimulus, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is you're starving coffers of revenue that we are bringing in now that we might need to rely on in the future. So it's running a bit of a risk if economic growth, which is affected by many things other than just the tax code, if economic growth doesn't deliver. So that's why, and without hearing about what their spending cuts would be, it's hard for a voter to say, okay, am I for this or against this? Mm-hmm. I'm happy to get a huge tax cut, but do I really want this program that I rely on cut?
And with Cruz and Trump, you're mm-hmm. you're going to have either much larger deficits or very, very large cuts in spending. John
or
Kasich
turn
has
around
been
and increase taxes once they're in office.
Yes,
someplace else.
I mean,
that's
all,
what
it's
Reagan
all possible.
Did.
John Kasich has been, it seems to me, by far the least detailed in his description of what he would do. But here he was talking with Sean Hannity earlier this month about why people are angry at the U.S. government and tax system.
We overregulate. We're choking small business, we're raising taxes, and we're blowing up the budget. So what do you do to fix it? Common sense regulations with an eye on rewarding small businesses, cut the taxes for businesses, that's why they're leaving. And secondly, cut individual rates, make it simpler like Reagan had. I basically have the Reagan plan.
Just the Reagan plan. We're going to talk a lot about Bernie Sanders when we come back from the break, but in a nutshell, Len, what do you know from John Kasich? I don't see much detail here.
There's very little detail. He says he's going to cut top tax rates. He talks about lots of other ways he's going to cut taxes. There's no detail at all on how he would raise taxes to offset those revenue losses. His plan actually looks a lot like Jeb Bush's plan, but with many, many fewer details. And Jeb Bush's plan would have cost about $6.5 trillion over the next decade. So, I mean, I guess the signal he's sending is that these are things he'd like to do, but he's committed to balancing the budget, so you shouldn't actually take the actual tax cut proposal seriously.
We should say Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker just today has endorsed Ted Cruz for president. Walker, of course, is a supporter of the flat tax. Is flat tax, Gene, necessarily beneficial for one income group or another?
Well, it can be set up so that it does – just by itself, it can disproportionately benefit the rich. Because, as a lower income person, you know, if you're paying the same rate as someone with $1 million, that's money you spend all your money. The guy who's making $1 million doesn't spend all his money, so he can afford to pay that 10% in taxes without it being too tough on him. So you can accommodate, you can come up with measures to help lower income folks so that they don't get punished by the flat tax.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. And enter offer code ONPOINT at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the tax plans of the 2016 candidates with Gene Sahadi at CNN Money, Leonard Berman from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. Of course, nobody knows exactly what would go through, but you learn a lot about the philosophy, the direction in which a candidate would push from looking at their tax plans. Bernie Sanders, big plans there as well. Here he was in the CNN Democratic debate in Flint, Michigan. This was early in March, explaining his tax policies would help pay for education initiatives, one of his many big spending projects.
We're not going to give tax breaks to the wealthy. We're going to ask them to start paying their fair share of taxes so we could raise the money to make sure that every child in this country, in Detroit, in Vermont, gets the quality education that he or she deserves.
Just a taste of Bernie Sanders on taxes there, and we'll dive in to exactly what he would like to see unfold. Some calls first. Jeff in Buffalo, New York. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I got to admit, I'm a Sanders man myself, but as far as these candidates go, what is the real plausibility of their plans actually being implemented if they're elected? Other than Hillary Clinton, these plans are pretty radical, and I just think back to the last election when Obama had his own grand plans to try and revolutionize healthcare, and look at where it got us.
Well, I mean, fair enough. On the other hand, there was a big healthcare reform. I mean, Len, is this all just pipe dreams, or, you know, could you see one of these dramatic, more dramatic changes in direction on taxes come to pass?
I think it would be hard. I mean, even when you look at Secretary Clinton's proposals, there are things that President Obama has proposed year after year after year, and Congress hasn't acted on them. They're pretty powerful interests against raising taxes on high-income individuals, putting in effect the Buffett rule and things like that. The Sanders plan, it's really hard to imagine Senator Sanders getting a fraction of what he's proposing enacted through a Republican Congress, unless the Congress were to flip as part of the election. And Senator Cruz and Mr. Trump are both proposing tax cuts that would be unprecedented in how large they are. And given the deficit situation we already have, I mean, we're running very big deficits under current law over the next decade. It's hard to imagine that even a Republican Congress would pass anything of the scale that they have proposed.
And yet, you kind of have to talk about it. I mean, if you don't talk about what people are proposing in a democracy, you end up in sort of an absurdist arena where it's just, you know, whose wife looks like what, and nobody really going to what's being proposed. I want to look at the Bernie Sanders plan, but another call first. Madison, Wisconsin. Alexandra, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because I think it's really important to, as your guests have said, to not just look at the promises of this election cycle, but to take a long view a little bit on what Sanders is proposing. And I think that what he's proposing is a new way to look at things as, you know, kind of how they were before Reagan. And so I don't think it's anything that radical. And I think that the more that we say, oh, it's so huge, the more that we kind of get distracted from the long view, which is that we've had wage stagnancy and income inequality increases for 30 years. And at a point, we need to start switching that. And whether things are fine for you or not, they're not fine for the vast majority of this population.
Yep.
And so he's proposing a different way to look at that and a way to be hopeful towards something better. And I think that if we're not careful, the hope goes into anger. And so I think that it's really important to see this as a long view and not just this election cycle and how we switch ideology towards something more supportive.
Alexandra, I get the gist of what you're saying, though. You know, there are significant changes in what Bernie Sanders is doing. I don't deny that you and many other people may be for that and see good reason for that. But let's just stare straight at it and see what we've got here. I appreciate your call, Alexandra. Gene, take us into the Sanders plan.
Sure. He would impose higher income tax rates across the board, even for people on the lower end, because of the 2.2% premium tax that he would add to income tax rates. And as I said before, I don't know if I got cut off. I think that's almost it's a very interesting concession to the fact that when you want to do something big like Medicare for All, you really can't do it just on the back of the top 1%, which is, you know, a sort of mantra of the Democrats. He would as well bump up the – effectively bump up the top income tax rates for wealthy families and even people with adjusted gross incomes over just $200,000, $250,000 for married couples. So really the top rate structure would go from 39.2% to 54.2% depending on how much you made. He'd also raise capital gains taxes by a lot for some people. He would take the Medicare surtax, which again is paid for by high-income families on part of their wages and part of their investments, and he would increase it. Whereas the Republicans are repealing it, he would actually make it 10% up from 3.8% currently.
Mm-hmm. You put it all together in the Tax Policy Center calculator here with Vox, and let's see, under Sanders, you make 30 to 35 household income. Taxes up 3,000 plus, 80 to 85 up 10,000 plus, make $150,000 to $160,000 household, tax hike of $18,500, $1 million to $1,001,000, a tax hike of $167,000. Now, again, Bernie Sanders is very clear that he wants the wealthy to help pay for some big changes here, and he wants everybody to chip in, but they'll get a lot back in benefits, he says. Can you run the numbers on a promise like that, Len?
Actually, we're in the process of trying to do that. We are at the Tax Policy Center, but we've asked our colleagues who work on health and education to mm-hmm. give us an idea of what the benefits would be by income level of those new proposals. You know, I think the caller actually makes a good point, which is that taking a long view on all of these proposals mm-hmm. is worthwhile. Senator Sanders actually has some really interesting new ideas. For one thing, he proposes a carbon tax, which virtually every economist, regardless of political perspective, thinks is the best way to deal with climate change.
How would that probably work?
It would certainly work as a matter of policy. I mean, basically, it says every time you burn fossil fuels that you're causing damage to the environment, and this would make people pay that cost. It would give them an incentive to drive less, to conserve, to try to find other ways to avoid using those fuels. It would give inventors an incentive to try to come up with new ways to that we haven't even thought of to conserve on fuel.
So this would be a tax, let's say, at the gas pump or any time there were fossil fuels being consumed, with I think some kind of rebate for households making under $100,000. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's actually not at the gas pump. It would be applied further up the stream so that oil producers would pay the tax, coal producers would pay the tax, and that makes it simpler. It's a really good idea as a matter of economics. Politically, it's gone nowhere, but it's good that a politician has actually proposed that.
There's also a financial transaction tax in the Sanders mm-hmm. plan. What's that look like, Gina? What would that produce?
You know what? Hold on one second. You know, let Len actually talk
okay,
about that.
Len,
that's okay, Len,
if I'm a big Wall Street guy and I'm doing a lot of trading or whatever it might be, what's the impact?
So the idea of the financial transaction tax is to actually to discourage inefficient trading. If you read the book Flash Boys by mm-hmm. Michael Lewis about, you know, investors who found a great way to make lots of money by getting between buyers and sellers in financial markets and really doing nothing of any economic value other than making themselves rich, this would shut that down. Secretary Clinton actually has a much smaller proposal that would do the same thing. Basically, under the Sanders plan, you pay a 0.5% tax on the sale of stock. So if you sold the stock for $100, you'd pay 50 cents in additional tax on top of that. There'd be smaller taxes on other kinds of financial transactions. The tax rates are probably higher than they need to be, and it would encourage a lot of tax avoidance. And there's a concern that with very high financial transaction taxes, that it would move a lot of trading out of the United States to other countries. But they're certainly more viable now than they used to be because a lot of European countries are adopting financial transaction taxes, and they are being used in the rest of the world, and there's certainly a plausible way of raising additional revenue.
Capital gains taxes, of course, high-income investors now pay about a 20% rate, plus this 3.8% Medicare surtax on some of those gains. Under Sanders' GNU report, that would go up to as much as 64%+ capital gains.
Right.
That presumably would produce a lot of revenue. What about the economic impact of that?
Well, see, that's the thing. It's sort of the exact opposite of the Trump. When we were talking about economic growth as kind of a philosophy of the Republicans, so Bernie Sanders has taken that tax the rich philosophy to the nth degree with his plan too. And the potential downside of that is that it will not, despite how high your rates are, it will not raise as much revenue as you expect. Because, you know, people who are sort of centrists who think about tax policy acknowledge there is a point above which a tax rate is actually too high. It will discourage work. It will discourage savings. It will discourage investment. And it from people who've looked at Bernie Sanders' plan, he's testing those waters a lot. And that's why even though he's made a very good faith effort to pay for his really expensive Medicare for All plan, he's really tried to do apples to apples. People who are analyzing the health care plan say, you know, it will cost X, but the tax hikes he's got in place may not actually raise as much revenue as he's expecting because the rates are so high. So that's a concern about the Sanders plan.
How you look at the world and anticipate behavior is a big deal here in terms of how these numbers turn out. Jim in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question concerns I love that you've run these numbers for all the different candidates. As a middle-income taxpayer, and you know, it always sounds nice to hear that I'm going to pay lower taxes. Nobody wants to hear higher taxes. It's a great talking point.
Yep.
But I tend to view things lately in a Polaroid negative trickle-down economics to where I watch my taxes go out, but I pay attention to what goods and services I get from federal, state, and local governments for that.
Polaroid negative trickle down. You got some big cosmology going on there. That's great. So what do you mean, Jim?
I'd like to know what the effects are going to be. And you talked about it a bit. I'd like to hear more as a voter what my effects are going to be to higher taxes, lower taxes. I mean, Bernie Sanders offers a lot. I'm not convinced that lower taxes are going to help me. And what are we going to cut?
Yeah, I mean, this is it. To net it all out gets very cosmic and difficult, Len, because you're talking about expectations of how the economy would respond. You're talking about potentially very large cuts in government services, or at the other end, the Sanders end, very large increases in some government offerings. But then you've got an expectation of how the revenue engine would work here. For a taxpayer, middle-income guy like Jim in Rhinelander, how do you sit back and really make sense of, you know, where the optimal point is here?
It's actually really hard to tell. Just to get a sense of, under the Trump and Cruz plans, if you wanted to just offset the revenue loss in the 10th year from their plans, you'd have to eliminate all non-defense discretionary spending or all defense spending, and you'd still need
all
to cut a little
all
bit.
Of it.
All of it.
I.e. no really government doing nothing but putting out guns, or else no guns and everything else.
And, yeah, it's not plausible. I mean, both Cruz and Trump have said they actually want to beef up military spending. At least, you know, Trump has actually ruled out making any cuts in Social Security and Medicare. Cruz hasn't done that, and he clearly would like to cut those programs, and that's where a lot of the big money is. But there would have to be huge cuts, bigger cuts than we've ever seen, certainly in our lifetimes. I think probably, you know, the last time we cut spending anything like this level, it was after World War II, and it was basically shutting down much of the military operation. So it didn't have an effect on it didn't affect individuals' pocketbooks directly. Those things, despite the politicians' best intentions, I think would be very, very difficult to get enacted, because voters and actually both parties actually want government to provide particular services. And they would like it all to come from what Mr. Trump has said he would do, which is cutting waste, fraud, and abuse, and maybe foreign aid.
But you're saying everything except military. One more call. Tom in Omaha, Nebraska. Tom, you're on. Our time is short, Tom. What's on your mind?
Hey, so just from the perspective of a 26-year-old with $70,000 in student debt, I know that I no longer prefer to have my debt, and it's going to be a long time before I get rid of it.
Yeah.
Now, accordance with our national debt, I haven't seen a single plan that takes any account into how we're going to pay it off. And as far as I'm concerned, the interest we're accumulating is just killing us.
Tom, let me pick it up right there. Gene, there's a 26-year-old with a lot of college debt thinking about federal debt and doesn't want it to be so deep, so big. Can you tell who would do best in chopping that down while taking care of business?
Well, no one really has put forth an adequate deficit reduction plan. Forget about their own proposals, let alone what they would do, at least on the Republican side, by adding to it so much. So I can't say, and I don't know. Interest rates right now are very moderate, but they are, you know, our costs, because our debt load is growing, our interest costs will go up even if interest rates stay low. On the other hand, there are a number of investments the country needs to make to grow its economy. A lot of people on both sides of the aisle agree with that, between infrastructure, education, things like that. I think that the discussion about how to reduce deficits long term, that has been absent from this election, as have any real policy discussions for the most part, which is a little scary. I think that, and it's Pollyannish of me to even expect it, but with anything, you really want to have the discussion with the country. What do we want to do as a country? How much will it cost? And are we willing to pay for it? That's across investments, across deficit reduction, across tax cuts. You have to think in those broad terms, and we're just not having that discussion.
Well, we're trying our best right here. We will do more. It's kind of a minimum to have a serious consideration of what you want for a country going forward. If you haven't read Jean Sahadi's coverage of the tax plans, I encourage you to do it. Link to all of her great coverage at our website, onpointradio.org. She is senior writer at CNN Money with us today from New York. Jean, thank you so much for being here. You're terrific.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And Leonard Berman, director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute. They have done so much foundational work in understanding all we can about these plans. Len, it's always terrific to have you. Thank you for joining us today.
Tom, thanks for having me back.
Listeners, dig in, learn. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.